because the very beginning of it damn near broke me. So
Oh.
no,
Well.
there was some stuff in it that doesn't work for you're laughing. You're laughing. I admitted.
It broke you, and I take so much joy. I was like, yes.
Hi there, and welcome to Hav and Charles Talk Comics. I am one of your hosts, Charles Herring, and I am here with my very good friend, and he's so proud of himself, my very good friend, Javier Gonzalez. Hi, Hav, how are you?
I am proud of myself. I'm good, Charles. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Well, you were doing the countdown or the mark, and then we go quiet for 10 seconds. Although I again, we were just saying this before we started recording. You play with that because you know for some reason when you say mark, I want to laugh. I start looking at you. You aren't doing anything necessarily funny. Sometimes you are, but then I had a panic moment, a panic moment, because I was like, oh shoot, did I make sure to switch the microphone from the device microphone to the plug-in good microphone, like from the internal mic? And then I've noticed I was on mono mix, and so anyways, there was a lot of very subtle machinations on my part,
Okay,
but yes.
you are on mono mix, and that's okay. That's what I want you on, because I don't want to run it left track, left ear, right ear on this.
Right.
So it's one thing without two tracks. If I'm going to have two tracks, which at some point I'd like to do, I don't want one to be left speaker, right speaker.
And then could we like slow down one of us so that we're talking really slow and then one of us kind of fast and then mix it back up and do like a George Martin Beatles thing with it?
Yeah, sure, why not? I like
Okay,
how you
cool.
said, can we?
It's the royal we.
Yes,
It's yeah, 'cause the Beatles were like, "Hey George, Mr. Martin, we'd like to do something with these things that have strings." And he was like, "Yeah, like which ones?" Well, you know, the ones where they hold it on the shoulder. And then they have a little thing when they scrape back and forth across. You mean a violin? Yeah. So that's me telling you. Anyways, okay, we're done. And scene.
This is episode 5 of season 5. So it's 5 of 5. We have actually done 4 episodes already. I dropped the 4th episode earlier this evening. Early. It was really, really early. I dropped it at 7:30. Normally they drop at midnight. So, yeah, I'm telling you, I was efficient. And that's really when I finished editing it. So I was done and off we went. And now we're recording a podcast where we're going to talk about two comic books once again. And those two comic books are Flex Mentallo and
Correct.
Traveling to Mars, both written and drawn by excellent creative teams. I mean, just ridiculously good creative teams.
Could not agree more.
Oh, I want to get back into the space I leave in between when we start, so I can it's for noise suppression. I've told you that a lot, but you don't seem to
Yes.
get it. Okay, so
I
it's for
don't. I
noise.
don't. You
Don't
use
worry
big
about it.
words,
I know.
suppression.
He said I don't. I say it's a 10 count, and then it's more than a 10 count, and I explained to him it's because I don't count very well. But this time he looked away, because the first time I really cracked him up for because he didn't know what he was doing is I was doing the count in sign language. And
That's right.
he didn't know what that was, and he's just like cry almost cry laughing for no because he hates anyone with any kind of handicap or
Well,
disability.
as we learned from the cold open from apparently last episode, anybody with any kind of disability, anybody with any kind of like at that time terminal disease,
Or difference. I it wasn't the
or just
terminal. It
different.
wasn't. That's not why you. It wasn't because he had a terminal disease. It's because it was a stigma of homosexuality. I counted this time. I gave it a 20 count because I counted up to 10 in sign language, and then I counted down from 10 in sign language. But
Oh.
he was looking away the entire time. He was just
I
like, oh
was.
no, oh no, oh no, I can't look at him.
Now
Anywho,
I it's
yes.
yeah. You don't look yeah, I don't want to now I know better. You're going to pull the football on me.
How am I pulling the football? It's
I
just it,
don't
I do innocuous stuff and you start giggling like an
I
idiot.
am I am easily amused to the surprise of no one.
This is true.
So, I suggested Flex Mentallo, and And you suggested traveling to Mars.
Yes.
Before we get into each of them individually, I read them obviously pretty recently since we just, you know, I read them relatively recently since the last podcast. I cannot put my finger on it, and maybe we can work it out while we're talking during this pod when we once again have become pod people together. Some themes, I swear, are shared between them. I could not put my finger on it. I could not, in my own mind, put words to it, but it was somehow weirdly coincidental or good, whatever, that we suggested them, because for some reason in my brain, these two somehow fit.
Yes.
And I'm not, maybe you can, no, you can elucidate why more better than me did. With the words.
I don't know if I can really put it into words, but they do. They go together. They thematically go together. Not because they have anything in how they were, in what genre they're written in. Because we have one that is written as a diary. The Traveling to Mars is written as a diary, and it's a science fiction type thing, except it is really dealing with the meaning of life and the meaning of what we owe to each other. And so is Flex Mentallo, but this is based on a made up, not that they weren't, are both made up, but I mean, literally within the genre, it was made up. It has a backstory that is hilarious. Did you read the foreword to
Flex? I did. I skimmed it. I'm going to be honest. No,
You should have read it carefully, and I am going to read some of it to you because it was brilliant. So they're both about, what did I say?
The meaning of life. Flex Mentallo also about what's real. What is reality?
Because reality is what you perceive.
Right.
I mean, that's the philosophers that get into it.
Therefore I am, Descartes, yeah. All that stuff.
Well,
yeah.
That's the thing. Mark Russell is a fucking philosopher. I mean, all of his stuff is talking about the simple things we owe each other and ourselves more than anything.
And now you're making me think of that panel or set of panels from Flintstones when the animal vacuum cleaners talking to the animal something else.
Yes.
And it's just so poignant.
The bowling ball and the vacuum.
Yes. Cleaner. Oh my gosh. So, well, let's get into Flex Mentallo. So let me just, you mentioned creatives. The great Frank Quietly does the art, and speaking of great writers too, the great Grant Morrison is the writer.
Yes.
And this Flex Mentallo is spun off of his appearance in Morrison's run on Doom Patrol, Johnny the Street? What? How am I blanking on that?
It's the Trans Street. The character.
Yeah, Johnny the Street. Johnny on the Street. Not Johnny on the Street. Why am I blanking on that?
I can't. I don't know. It's that really incredibly odd character.
Yes.
That is literally a street, but it's a transsexual street
where a lot of people take refuge.
Yes. Well, it's a place for people that are different. And right. it is beautiful within itself, and it's beautiful that Grant Morrison refers to himself themselves as them. So I think when we read Doom Patrol, I talked to you about it, that I had read it before some of it, and I just didn't get it. And then when we were discussing the fact, then you told me, and then I read about that he came out and said he prefers the pronouns they, them, it made so much more sense. Everything about it. And it's the same thing with Flex Mentallo here.
Yes.
It's coming from a place of difference, and it's trying to show everyone should be accepted for who they are. Unless you're a goddamn Nazi. Anyway, sorry. I just want to be, since we're living in the times we're living in, I thought I would finish that.
And it's Danny the Street, by the way. I don't know where I got Johnny. Danny the Street. And then the other thing that it explores too, speaking of everybody that's different should be welcome, is the sometimes alienation that people that are different or feel that they're different, like this, the Sage Wallace is going through Wallace Sage in Flex Mentallo, who is the creative that apparently bore, is going to bear life to these superheroes from another dimension. It's so awesome. I need to reread it.
It's incredibly confusing. It's confusing as fuck. So Flex Mentallo was the way his character is described in this, he was a comic. He was brought to life by his creator, who was not a comic book creator, but had written a character, but he really needed him to be alive. So then he was alive. So that there's that. Then there's the entire whole backstory of the writing of Flex Mentallo that they said he was created in the foreword, which I read.
And that he was really created in the 50s or something, right?
Nope, earlier.
Oh wow.
Yeah, okay. in the 40s. And I know this because I literally read this whole thing today.
Okay.
So Flex Mentallo came out and it was one of the most popular things ever. And when it originally started, it was the creator came up with it when he was driving high with a couple of guys. He woke up under a tree hungover, and all he had been thinking was Flex Mentallo, Flex Mentallo. And the founder of Manly Comics was the name of it, was a Southern man who knew that he was going to be the last of his line, a wealthy Southern man. So he was just having them draw comics that he and a certain subset of men of his acquaintance would enjoy. And it was all about Atlas and...
Charles Atlas.
No.
Atlas, like
Atlas, the Greek god.
The Greek god.
I'm sorry, Titan. Titan.
The Titan.
Yes. Right. And so it goes on talking about all of this and at the heights of this, but during war, and they were, it was amazing during World War II that people didn't get it because it just got popular with children and GIs because it was started in 1941, and boy howdy, the artist wished it could have just lasted forever. But then they hit a point where they did a Hitler issue because they thought Hitler was going to win, and it came out, and then they did a...
Whoopsie. And
I know. You really do need to read this.
I need to read the forward. Okay.
The forward is worth reading. And then it gets to the point where they decided that they were able to convince them that it was satire enough that they didn't get the electric chair. Yes. If they hadn't bought satire bullshit we fooled them with, we'd all have died in the chair. Ashley Dubois, however, I'm reading, was not to escape the skeletal touch of the Grim Reaper. His health collapsed under the strain of endless legal wrangling and cross-examination. Never a strong man to begin with, this gentle, fragile Southern bloom was to be trampled underfoot by an uncaring judicial process. I saw him near the end after they'd torn out his soul, says Chuck Fiasco. That's the artist. They'd broken him. He'd given everything up until there was nothing left to give, and it was terrible what they did to him. He looked to me like a peg. Like some kind of cheap wooden peg. All I can say is that at least they couldn't take his self-respect. At least he died with dignity. Ashley Dubois' body was found contorted over a vaulting horse in a sleazy motel room. Partially dressed in a filthy Roman-style toga, his face smeared with rouge and lipstick, he had clearly drowned in his own vomit and urine. A pair of women's silk stockings was stuffed in his mouth, along with several hundred sleeping tablets. A note, written in violet ink, on lavender-scented notepaper, said simply, "The dogs have all got masks, and may the Lord have mercy on our souls." The perfect Southern gentleman had found peace at last.
Wow. Wowie, wow, wow. Okay, no, I'll read that. I did not. I skimmed that, okay. And I just thought it was...
So then they went on to the Silver Age of comics, where it came back, and they brought back these characters. And they talk about some stuff that they brought in. And then they're talking about, they got a guy who was just out of college, and not far out of college, and he'd written two science fiction books. And they were talking about all the LSD they did. And then the guy just disappeared. And here's Chuck Fiasco again, talking about the writer. Well, he was the sort of guy who would always land on his feet. Fiasco smiles fondly. I can just see him now, sitting on a beach in Hawaii, surrounded by beautiful girls and sipping a pina colada. Good old Wally. The guy's an inspiration to us all. In fact, Wally Sage died in 1982, a broken, penniless wretch. His talent destroyed by drink and drugs, his once desirable features gnawed into a bloody ruin by tertiary syphilis and face cancer. He was buried in an unmarked pauper's grave.
Oh my God.
I'm telling you, I honest to goodness may have enjoyed, and I liked the comic, I may have enjoyed the foreword better than I did the rest of it.
I take it back. I was thinking of the foreword of that Patton Oswalt did of Traveling to Mars.
I did not skim this. Oh, you did not skim that? No, you should have read that.
I'm looking
man.
At this. This is long.
No, it is. I know.
It's like three pages just of text, so it's long for me.
When we're done with the podcast this evening, I will read you the whole thing.
This book is something of the Used Adult Magazine Center. I'm just reading the...
Yeah, the whole shtick is it was basically quasi-porn. At one point in that forward, they talk about... They didn't get it, even though at one point Hercules is spanking Atlas on his bare buttocks.
They talk about it in the comic where when Sage Wallace, or Wallace, God, I forget his name, and I just read it, where the creator is talking about the homoerotic, you know, spank, you know, tights and bare-chested men and...
Oh, well, there's a whole section where they're trying to get into the place where they can get up to the League of Leagues.
Yeah,
space station. It's just a bunch of porn,
there's so much. So just to give, if you all that are listening don't know the Doom Patrol run that Grant Morrison had with various artists on Doom Patrol, that was it was the inspiration for the DC comic book. I mean, the DC show on HBO that I still haven't finished the last season, but is the first couple seasons of that is excellent for sure. At least two, if not three. Flex Mentallo, instead of mind over matter, it's almost matter over mind. Because if he flexes his muscles, apparently he can...
Change reality.
And it's so... And then I did read this. He was very much modeled after... When you say Atlas, Charles Atlas, remember the bodybuilder guy that would have all the stuff on the back of comics?
Yes.
He was very much modeled after Charles Atlas, which nobody noticed, apparently, until this 1990... Oh, this came out in 96. This 1996 four-issue run came out, and the president of the Charles Atlas company took a little umbrage to the fact that the person that their company was built upon was being made fun of. Well, guess what? DC summarily filed a motion to dismiss under the fair use and parody, you know, findings way back when, and the case was dismissed. And then I don't know if DC did this almost as a fuck you. Then they went on to reprint it, his initial appearances, including the Charles Atlas parody in the third and fourth collections of the Morrison Doom Patrol series, Down Paradise Way and Musclebound.
Yes.
And then in 2012, DC reprinted this miniseries on its own in a hardcover edition with bonus material. And then for whatever reason, the series was reprinted in Italian. I'm not sure why that's mentioned on the Wikipedia page, but there you go. So
because
all that
that's
too.
Facts about the stuff.
Yeah. But I'm just saying
And you've just had a reoccurring segment of Hav Reads Wikipedia. Wikipedia.
The Charles Atlas stuff is hilarious.
It is because in this they even made note of the fact that it's not so much the Charles Atlas character. His background is more the character that Charles Atlas is talking to on the beach that gets sand kicked in his face, and his travails to become the Charles Atlas, that he's found the man to come to him, and he shall become that man. So it's even more than that. They took that
and ran with
here
it.
And said, okay, fuck you. We use Charles Atlas. It's on the back. It's been on the back of comic books. They literally were on the back of comic books when you and I were kids.
Exactly. That's how long they were. They apparently from like post-World War II to the 80s at least. And you're right. It was the scrawny kid, the outsider, the wimp, the whatever.
Yeah. The Hav.
Exactly. That felt other. And in the series, you have, Wallace Sage, gosh darn it, let me look. And he's trying to OD, he maybe thinks he's losing his mind.
Well, he took they did a thing throughout it where they were going back and forth. I took the pills, the pills, or did I take the M&Ms? There were two, there were pills, there were M&Ms. What I took from that is they were going back between two realities, because he was even saying that I have to decide which I took because that's the path we have to go down. Because the whole idea was he had to re-spark the light to bring back the superheroes to save the world.
And then, well, and I thought of the red pill versus blue pill,
okay,
kind of thing. The M&Ms versus the death pills. Which reality do you want to live in? Which one's easier? Which one's harder? Yeah. Are you right about which one you think is the easier or harder reality?
Well, yeah. But it was also, do you want to live or do you want to die? Because if you decided you took M&Ms, you get to live, and so does everybody else. But if you decide you want to, I mean, it was more than the red pill, blue pill, because
true. Well, the realities are so. I mean, at one point, it's who took his hand. Was it his uncle? Was it a super?
Oh yeah, and yeah. He's going.
There,
he's
gets
going
really dark.
Yeah, that was some. Yeah, and what? I mean, no, and not so much who took his hand. What's going to happen to him?
Exactly.
That was. Instead, it's the superheroes talking to him that he has a choice. That he is the reason he got these ideas about all these superheroes is because that's the real reality, and he needs to bring it back. Because the Wasp and
Ant-Man
are passed out in the microverse. I mean, it's Wasp and Ant-Man. I mean, I can't remember what they called them.
Minimus and something, Nano-Man or something.
Minimus and Nano-Man.
Yeah, and they're sleeping
they're being buried in a matchbox. Not sleeping, they're being buried in a matchbox.
Yes, you're right. Yes. But they have them spooning each other, so it looks
sweet. Well, they were in love, but pretty much anytime you see them, they're just holding each other.
Yeah, that's true. And they do go, by the way, this is 96, they do go super small, like, to transverse time and space.
Yes.
To save their universe, which is very much like what happens in Endgame and in Quantumania, Ant-Man.
But
on a completely different level.
Well, yeah, and beyond that, that's something that's already had happened in Ant-Man and Wasp. I mean, that if your implication is that Marvel took that from this, they took that from things that Ant-Man and Wasp have always done.
To reshape reality on a whole... No, I don't think so. I'm saying they took it to reshape their whole reality.
Okay.
And... Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's only four issues. I read this,
five.
I think, for sure after it came out. I didn't read it when it came out, but it was sometime in the late 90s. I know this came out in 96. I show first issue published, June of 96. So summer of 96. I think I read it like closer to the end of 99 or 2000, maybe early 2000s, but somewhere around there. It left such an impression on me that I've had it on my mind to suggest for a while and just kept on for some reason putting it off. Because it was something that when I read, I was like, I really need to go back and reread that. I read it once and there's so much in it, even though it's not overly dense with 1980s Chris Claremont stuff.
Yeah. I'm going to interject here real quick.
Yeah.
They did not go in the Marvel Universe, they did not go in to change the past, which you seem to imply. And again, they went into a different universe where those things happened and changed their universe. They didn't rewrite their own. They rewrote another one. We've had this argument all the time.
It's not an argument. No, I understand that they just like in this one, uh-huh, they didn't change the past. They were just creating a new future.
Yes.
Just like in the MCU.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure you were...
I'm not saying that the past is different. The past is always the past, and whatever happens going forward.
You have a branch of a timeline.
Exactly. So I'm just saying it made me think of that too.
No, you're good.
The fact... is a character in this, like the fact, I think.
Yes. I'm pretty sure is the Question and or
exactly.
Rorschach.
Which are both immediately made me think of those two characters that are Steve Ditko creations. Yes.
Another classic outcast.
Correct. And then the other thing I thought of is I know Flex Mentallo's doing the journey, but if you could have plugged in any comic book character into that journey... And I think you could have, right?
Yeah. I really do. This goes to something I was saying last pod, And it's something I kind of fleshed it out because this works for both of these comic books. Last pod, I talked about my biggest problem with The Defenders was that it's just got so much going on, like all of these events, and I like a smaller story. This was a big event. This was the redoing of the universe, but it was told from a very narrow viewpoint and a small story. I literally wrote something down. I said, I like a small story in a vast world. I feel too often they try to tell too much and the story is shadowed by the event. Because the story is what is important, not the event. And that's where when a Marvel movie is good, it's good. Because that's when they're doing the story and they're telling the small part of what's going on. And that's the same thing that happened in this. They're telling the story of the boy that has to save them all. And Flex Mentallo, who is his... I still didn't get how they related, but his favorite character.
The boy created Flex Mentallo in his little homemade comic book.
I think you are correct. And that is where it's a small story. It's the small story that changes the universe. It was the brilliance of Black Hammer. Black Hammer was a huge event book, basically, except it was a small story about that huge event.
Right. No, and...
In our next comic also is just a massively far-reaching... It's a small story in a massively far-reaching world.
Yes.
So these are all the things. It's the brilliance of being able to find the small story amid everything else. So,
and it also doesn't help my problem where I see all these characters in the background or they're mentioned just by name in a wisp here, and I fixate on them, and I'm not going to go down the list because I didn't take notes.
There's like 450 characters that they made up and threw in there. I mean, there was just it was amazing. I was reading through this evening, and they're just like this character and this character and this character and this one does this and this one. I just like, oh my lord! And I was just flying by them.
Oh yeah, well yeah. Wallace Sage is a kid.
So there was some great stuff in here.
The cop that gets with the, what is that guy's name?
The Hoax.
Yes. Oh my gosh, that whole sub, what, not even a sub, I mean, they were a major character, but no, and the wife, and
yeah, his wife dies,
the fish asking, that he keeps on replacing.
We know about the fish because she's asking about the fish, and he tells her before she's dying, while she's dying, that, oh no, that fish will outlast us all. Then he tells the Hoax that he had to change that fish every 5 because she loved that fish and he just couldn't bear, and it was a goldfish, so he'd just go buy another one and buy another one and buy another one. It was a beautiful little thing of what we do. Again, best stories, what we do for love.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. No, there's a lot. There's a lot going on. I really need to reread this. Not right now, but maybe in a month, and just take my time, because the reality, what's real, what's not, you create your own. There's a lot of big themes going on. You create your own reality. You get to pick. You get to literally choose your own adventure.
Yeah, you get to pick your own reality. But there were some great, there were great small touches in this too. Flex Mentallo evidently can be attacked like kryptonite with mentalium.
Yes, that's right.
There were like two dense text on it. I did one just because it has the part that I like the best for this. Would it be black mentallium, which induced a coma? Would it be shocking pink mentallium, which I was invariably invited to explore complex issues of gender and sexuality? That's what I loved. That was great. And then silver mentallium, which robbed me of my sense of humor. And then there was the final one. I think I forget what color it was, but it would make him live a completely different life. So he would just become someone else and not even know it. He could be an old lady. He could be you got to know that's the, I'm going to put a pin in that, just in case we bring this back, I can do a completely different story with just that, or quite honestly with all of them, just like they did 4 million red kryptonite Superman stories.
Yeah. Red kryptonite and green kryptonite versus yellow kryptonite versus what. Yeah. It's Grant Morrison is really good at what they do. And they do have their own, how do you say it, creator owned properties. Like we read one of theirs. What was that? The kids, the not Perdition's Road.
Well,
I swear it was a creator owned kind of horror one. But I think Grant Morrison is really good at playing in this playground that where there's kind of some characters that, and then add on like they took Doom Patrol and just made it so much better.
Yeah,
in my opinion. So not to say that they couldn't or haven't, for all I know, created their own stuff and universes, and this is essentially what they did I don't know.
He created Flex Mentallo.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's just amazing. It's just unique. I can't, even though there are themes shared with Traveling to Mars, I can't think of a comic book like Flex Mentallo, like Doom Patrol, quite frankly, that this was born out of. It's just its own thing, and it's freaking awesome. So
it is. It really is. There's also a full page spread where a drunk comes up to Flex Mentallo in a bar.
Oh, that's right.
And he's telling him he's talking about the superheroes, and he was talking about how they're hiding in plain sight. And he was an astronaut, and he saw him once in space. He was going to the moon, and he was the last one, so nobody knows his name. And he's talking about how nobody believed me. No wonder I'm a goddamn drunk. Billy Graham would be a goddamn drunk if he knew what I know. They're spying on us from their satellite headquarters. See, there's nowhere you can hide. And he's standing there. And while he's standing, there's a guy reading the newspaper that really looks like Clark Kent with gray hair. And then that guy then stands up. He stands up and he starts walking out. And then he's standing right behind Flex Mentallo, and he's almost as big as Flex Mentallo. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's like, oh, that was such a nice little.
Yep.
It was just beautiful.
It was. It's also, and then the poor ex-astronaut asked for money to drink.
Oh yeah, he's like, can you buy me a drink?
Yeah, yes, I remember exactly what you're talking. It's so good. Okay.
Really, just a great comic.
Yes, agree. I don't have any. Any picks of the knit? I just anything else on this one before we move on?
No, we can move on. That's fine.
Okay,
I enjoyed it. It was a good pick.
I did too. I did pat myself on the back. Right. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I did.
Okay, so then you suggested Traveling to Mars, which in floppies first appeared in apparently November of 22, and in trade paperback like last year was collected 11 issues.
Yes, it was 11 issues. It was a chunk of comics, and there was nothing extraneous in it.
It might have been a chunk of comics, but man,
I couldn't do it in one sitting. I had to put it down because the very beginning of it damn near broke me. So, there was some stuff in it that doesn't work for you're laughing. You're laughing. I admitted.
It broke you, and I take so much joy. I was like, yes.
I'm glad you're burying your soul, and I'm sitting here giggling. I'm glad my emotional distress amused you. All right.
Well, no, I'm thinking about the fact that you, the whole thing where I had it in my head that you always suggest dystopian futures.
Oh, my God. Hey, well, fuck you. You did too. I was thinking that. I literally was thinking that you and I are. This is both of them, and I've been being very careful with the, especially after giving the grief about V for Vendetta.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking. Like this is.
Yeah,
no oh shit. My God, with those. This is very near future.
Yes.
I mean, I think they even give a year, 2040 something. And I was like, Jesus fucking Christ, I'm probably gonna still be alive. No, I'm gosh, knock on wood, Jesus.
I was probably? Oh, fuck, dude, that's...
not to get too dark. No, it's just, that's not, and the whole... okay, so this is written by the great Mark Russell.
Yes.
That we've talked about before, read stuff by before. He did the Snagglepuss stuff. He did Flintstones. I'm blanking on something else, maybe.
He did the Fantastic Four that we read that was... They've done that with Spider-Man. They've done that with Fantastic Four, where they've just kind of redone it just as if took on the time. And I thought that was an excellent Fantastic Four.
And then the art by this, I heard it. What'd you say?
And you didn't like it. Anyway.
They did it. This was art by Roberto Melli, M-E-L-I.
Yes.
Who I saw described somewhere as up-and-coming talent.
Yeah, his art was incredible in that thing.
And I think I read on the cover of this in the Hoopla, he did win the Eisner for Best Writing, and this won the Eisner for Best Comic Book of the Year.
Okay. I can see that. This kind of transcends comic books in some ways. He wrote a little novel, and then he made pictures with it, like a legit novel.
Yeah.
And then instead of fleshing out all of the everything going on, he got an incredible artist to draw it. And the themes and the deepness and the philosophical stuff was, see my fancy word, stuff, were just beautiful.
In 11 issues, I kind of like that it's 11 issues. Like, it's just like, nope, it wasn't six, it wasn't 12. This is how many we needed.
We needed 11 issues. And honestly, he needed 11 issues.
Needed 11 issues. I was wondering, I was like, yeah, I can see it being in beginning, middle, and end, but we'll get there. But man, like any good creative team, the world that they drop you into seamlessly, this is just the way things are. It's bad. But apparently in this world, at least they have a freaking space elevator, which we still don't have or even close to having here, which pisses me off a little bit.
Okay.
In geosynchronous orbit.
Yeah, but we're actually much more farther along in green technology than they are in the world he created. It ain't that bad.
That's, well, yeah, because they're
literally running. They refused to do anything green, and now they're just gonna burn gas until they run out, and they're running out. So,
well, and apparently, so the whole, if you haven't read this, look, spoilers, it came out a few years ago, but the premise is that Roy Livingston is approached. He really doesn't know by who at first.
The premise of this is that we're running out of gas. A probe droid on Mars that had been dormant for a long time, we find out later, not really dormant, but had been ignored for a long time, said that it found an enormous amount of gas.
Methane, I think.
Methane on the moon. I mean, on Mars, and that would just absolutely fix the problems that were going on Earth. So the world erupted into a fight on who owned that, and they decided that just like...
The name of the ship, too.
Well, yeah, that's later, but just like when we took over a country by showing
up... Do you have a flag?
First one, yes, do you have a flag? The first person to get there could claim it. So that's when Roy Livingston came in, because he was approached because he had terminal cancer, and they wanted to send him to Mars to plant a flag and let him die on Mars.
So, well, just like very colonizer. And I told Chris Fox that I would mention his name. So, hey, Chris, just like your ancestors of colonizers, very much so in play here. So there you go.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. That's for you. That's for you. That's for you, Chris. Sorry, wow. I had to do that. I told him I'd mentioned him. He was very. I think he was a little verklempt that I'd mentioned other people and not him.
Oh, so that's how you mentioned him. Well, I'm glad not to get the colonizer blowback from you, so, like I do on the group text with you and Caesar.
So, that's all. It's all. I'm joking. Of course, I'm joking. Except about you, Chris. No, I'm joking, as far as you know.
Yeah. So, actually, when he says something about me being colonizer on the group thread, it's basically, well, not as bad as Chris.
Exactly. It's like, well, yeah. But did you notice that the company that sponsors, he doesn't ask who's sponsoring him to do this. At first, he kind of thought they're based out of the Space Center or somewhere in Alabama or something.
Yeah, so they are based out of the Alabama Space Center, but he does not know who does it at first, because they bring him there, they're running tests on him, and then what is the name of the company?
Kind of meat company, it's artificial meat. You notice that?
Yes, it is. Yeah, the artificial meat company, which we know they're already banning artificial meat. They're not going to allow that to happen. Jesus.
So stupid. I cannot tell the difference between Look, have you had one of those Burger King Impossible Burgers?
Yeah, I have. That's not what I took from artificial meat. That's not the ones they're trying to make illegal. I was thinking that is vat grown, but maybe it is. Maybe it is a Beyond Burger, Impossible Burger kind of thing. I do like those.
I'm thinking, well, and also, by the way, the technology I think already does exist where you could grow.
Yes, that's what meat. They're trying to make it illegal.
That's so dumb. Yes,
it is, because
they would try to make that illegal.
Yeah, it fixes a lot of problems. Vat grown meat would be a lot better. It's a whole lot less of methane, and we can eat our way out of what we got out on the range right now. We just have a regular amount of cows.
And then anytime I see, I don't know if you ever go on the YouTube, and the Dodo has the channel. Cows are incredibly smart. Chickens are smart. They're all smart. I should be a vegetarian. I should be a vegan, because pigs are smarter than dogs. Anyways, that's my hang up.
Yeah.
Roy finds out that this meat company is sponsoring him, and they're going to pay $10 million to his mom, who his dad passed away some time ago. He has not, in his estimation, lived a very fulfilling life, and he's kind of depressed down, and now he's got terminal cancer, stage 4?
Yeah.
Cancer?
Stage 4 cancer. It's going to be abated. He really didn't have much time to live. He hadn't even told his mom. And that was part of the one that broke him, when they got his mom on the phone when he's on the plane, because as you know, my mom died a year ago. Yeah. So when it did that, and he realized that he hadn't told her, and he felt so bad about not telling her. He didn't even tell her about the cancer. He didn't tell her he was leaving, didn't tell her about the cancer. So that one got to me.
Oh, I bet. And then the long lost love. Go ahead.
Yeah, the long lost love. This is told. It's an as told by, basically, because it's his diary. He's writing a diary, and he's even talked about, nobody's ever gonna. Who's gonna read it? Because they talk about maybe an alien can find it at some point, and ways that it will.
He's also drawing in the diary.
He's drawing. He's drawing pictures of his father, and his long lost love. He did get married. He calls himself a complete and total failure at life. And it is a story about that, but he did do one thing in his life, and he was in love with a woman, and he hurt her in a way that he knows it's his fault, and he really wants to talk to her. And they can't find her, because she disappeared. When she left him, she disappeared. And it was a beautiful fucking story.
Yes.
It just, everything. I cannot recommend this comic book enough. He has two probes, AI probes, on the ship with him.
Correct.
And they're friendly. They were just born. They activated them when he stepped onto the ship. And they don't know what a human is, and they do things for him, like they change the ice machine so it could make snow cones for him.
Yeah.
And they watch.
What are their names?
They watch
Arthur and something? No.
I don't.
I'm blanking on their names.
That's names in me, so you know I don't know them. So they sent him films to watch. They told him they were going to give him this giant film library. They didn't. They gave him a bunch of kangaroo. As far as I could tell, it was almost all... I think he said it was 11 films for this journey. I'm like, wait, we have digital stuff. You can upload way more films than that. And most of them were, I think 7 of them, that were the kangaroo kid.
Where the kangaroo, there's a literal kangaroo.
In Texas. And the psychiatrist, the doctor that he talks to periodically, because he's dying while they're going to, and they're trying to keep his feelings up, says, well, it's good to laugh. So he's laughing, and the robots are with the probes are with him, and they can't laugh. So they finally start making chicken noises.
Like bawk, 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 bawk,
yeah. Bawk, 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 bawk.
Yeah.
It is trying to laugh, because they don't know what's going on, and they can speak English.
No. And they're like, he gets mad at them at one point. And then you just see
yeah, he couldn't sleep because they were out racing each other in the hallway. So he yells at them, and then he feels really fucking bad because he's like, this is the first fun they've probably ever had. They've only been alive for 2 weeks. I just yelled at two little kids for having fun.
For playing.
Yeah, for playing. So he felt guilty about that.
Because they know they kind of messed up or feel like they did, one of them reaches in with a snow cone. Yeah. Like to say sorry.
Yeah.
And so there's, go ahead.
Well, they're trying to find, they told him, oh, we found her. What's her name? Cassandra?
Candace.
I knew it was a.
Yeah, it was Candace.
A sound. Candace. They told him they found her and they brought this woman in, and then she starts yelling that she was with another company and that they found Candace and they were holding her ransom, and he had to declare for that for their company, and then they'll release her unharmed.
Yeah.
And that's when the robots who have decided they liked him told him about the bomb strapped on the outside just in case something like that happened.
So they could kill him.
They could just... And so then he sends, so then they agree that one of the probe droids will go out. Now I'm calling them droids because I'm a Star Wars nerd. One of them will go out onto the ship and release it so it goes away. He does it, and then somehow his magnetic treads lose their
gravity
grip.
Or whatever. Yeah,
and he starts to float away, and the other probe fortunately was able to turn the ship in such a way that he could catch it and they come in, and then the poor little thing goes and hides in a closet, and he can't even speak English anymore, and through the rest of it he can't speak English, and his compatriot translates and he says, I don't want to ever go back out there, I can't ever go back out there, they're going to make me go back out there. And Roy promises him that you will never have to go back out there. He says, I don't know if I have that power. Yeah. But it's just everything that he writes is just beautiful. It really is. It's just the kindness that he wants. If we could all treat people the way he seems to want us to treat people, we would all be better off. Saying, let's care about each other. That's why we're here.
And like, it shouldn't be that, oh, Leopold and Albert. Gosh darn it, that was killing me. Leopold and Albert, and I forget which is which. I think Albert's the one that goes outside. But yes, starting with that, and you get the feeling on the voyage there that these two, they're AI, but that they're more than just, I don't know, AI, but with like really in real intelligence, sentience. The one that came back was afraid of dying, and it scarred them, and they have some kind of post-traumatic stress disorder from it. And him reassuring it, and I'm sorry, I'm looking at a panel while he's wearing Stevie Ray Vaughan's iconic hat because they gave it to him because
he plays guitar, so they thought he'd like it. And he admits, he's like, that's all they knew is I played guitar. I got to admit, I really like the hat.
Yeah.
I loved that. I mean, they got it right, but not because they knew jack shit about me.
And it's a very iconic hat with the log, with a big feather boa thing.
No, but they're saying it was literally his hat, though.
No, it's literally Stevie Ray Vaughan's.
They bought Stevie Ray's hat.
Which I've got to believe is in the Smithsonian, but you know what? I didn't Googleize that, but... It is a nice touch. And you go through his backstory about where he thought he was going to, he wanted to be a musician. He wanted to play the guitar, and he, like the band he was with, cut him loose like after 2 weeks or something.
Yeah, beat him up and stole his amp.
Yeah. I was like, fucking shit. Yeah. And him and his wife, they do the sweetest thing when they exchange vows, they exchange fortune cookies.
Yes.
That was so cool and sweet and different, and I've never heard of that. And, you know, the back and forth of them, they never had kids. She had a procedure that could be reversed.
All she wanted was kids. When they met, she told him, she said, it's going to sound dumb. All I want to do is have a child. I saw the joy of my mom with me and my sister, and all I want to do is have a kid. And they decided that she was going to have a procedure because he was too afraid to have a procedure. As he said, I wouldn't go see a doctor. And well, that's also why I have stage 4 cancer, because I refused to go to a doctor when it might have done some good. But when they go back, when he makes assistant manager at the pet store, which is what he said, I have to be assistant manager before we can have kids. They go in and the doctor explains that something went wrong and it can't be reversed.
Well, and it, look, stuff like that, for a lot of different reasons. Look, me and my wife never had kids. It just didn't happen. And it, you know, at a certain age, it just, it's not a good or bad thing. It just, it's the way things are. But you start to, when you get a little older, you start thinking about stuff like that. And, you know, the what ifs and, you know, I don't, I'm not going to call it regret for me, but it just, you, or for us, it's just stuff like that you think about and you wonder, you know, decisions that were made, were they the right ones? Were they the wrong ones? It's interesting. And it make, this is a comic book, just like anything he writes, makes you think.
Yes.
And on a lot of different levels.
Damn it, Russell, you made me think.
I don't, yeah, man. The
no, I
the
gotta,
other thing.
I gotta tell you the part that I just, that I had to put it down for a bit. I can, Eternity gives me the heebie-jeebies. Expansion forever. It just, if I get too deep thinking about that, it just freaks me out a little bit. So with the part when he's the doctor is explaining the creation of the universe and the miracle and all of this stuff, but it's really talking about the expansion and how this is just all of that I read. And then I'm like, okay, now I got to sit down because I got to get out of the mind frame that puts me in. It's a reason why I couldn't go. There's no way I could do physics to a high level because I can't sit and think about that. Because once I open my mind to it, I get more just horrified at eternity and the size of the universe and all of that than I do intrigued by it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so. No, it makes sense to me. It's fascinating. It puts for me, it helps me put stuff in perspective.
It can. I feel, but like, I have to take it at a smaller level.
Gotcha. Because there's new stuff coming out all the time. And look, I have a science page that I read. It's not like I get the math behind it.
Okay.
But that now these theoretical physicists with a lot of math behind it are now, I'm going to say hypothesizing, but there's math behind it too, that we could very well, this universe, our universe could very well be the byproduct or the outcome of a super black hole, that there really wasn't a big bang from nothingness.
Okay.
So, and so anyways, that's a side tangent. No, the one thing about it, you talked about the doctor.
Yes.
That he talks to periodically to just kind of see how he's doing, because he is on a ship, albeit with two sentient, I feel, robots.
Yes.
The other thing that the doctor mentions and that makes him feel better is that if and when our species ceases to exist on Earth, plastic will still be around.
Oh, yeah.
And so there will be evidence that there were at one point some kind of intelligent creatures here, and that the plastic will be around forever, which is, I don't know if that's irony, but that plastic's going to outlive us by eons.
I don't know what irony is.
I don't either. Not anymore. I don't even know what's, yeah. I keep on thinking, speaking of timelines, like that I know there's people on Blue Sky that we're in the worst timeline, or yes, one of the worst timelines.
We're in one of the worst timelines.
Okay, so he finally gets to Mars, and then, look, we've been talking about it for a second. You find out there's a population of robots.
Yeah, you find out there's a population of robots, and you find out...
Go ahead.
...that there is no gas there. The robot...
Vera.
Vera. Well, he names her Vera.
Yeah, he names her Vera.
Because
it,
you need a name. Oh, no, I think... No. No, he didn't name her Vera. He named... I think maybe that was her name. I'm sorry.
I thought he named her. I think he just decided to name her Vera.
Because I thought that he named, maybe he did, but I know he names the first one they make, because that's Candace, but we'll get to that.
Yes.
So yeah, the robot was ignored for so long and they didn't respond. They just stopped listening. And
The creators
stopped caring, because that's where he went with this, was that they knew, and unlike us, we don't know if we have a creator, frankly, but those robots, by God, knew they had creators,
right?
And they didn't know why the fuck they were there, and they didn't know why
they were doing the job as they were told to do.
And then they were just abandoned. They didn't know they were there to be abandoned and to just eventually die off, but they didn't. Because then we found this with a lot of these things we've sent out there. They last a whole lot longer than we think they're going to, because their mission is to last longer. And they built their own. They built solar so they could recharge themselves. They had a scrap pile of all of the dead, sadly, the dead
rovers
yeah. that were out there, and they were using it to save themselves. And Vera just wanted some answers. And the answer she got was Roy. Roy showed up, and he was pissed at first.
Oh, yeah. He was like, what do you mean there's no methane here? And yeah. he was, but then he comes around, and then they, well, I'm skipping around here, but then they also yeah. present him with, they're very proud. They're like, look, hey, we took some scraps, and this is the first
yeah,
they entity
made, well,
we
the,
made.
Because unique... of what he brought, there was
oh,
kind
yeah, that's
of a,
right.
And it was beautiful when they did it at the end. It was this beautiful thing, because when Albert came back in and was terrified and couldn't talk, Roy writes in his diary that he thought about taking one of the tons of CPUs that they had and just replacing it, but he didn't think it would be fair to Albert to change him like that just so he could speak again, just so he could speak English again, because that would take away who he was. He didn't want to change Albert. He wanted
and his experiences and
yeah,
it, what he
it, yes. Yeah. This is what makes us. Our experiences make us. So I'm going to. You can get past this. Well, we have to give you the chance. So they took all of those, and because they had it, they could make another. Basically, they made a new life, because
yes.
that's what Roy was talking about in his journal. They made new life. They took what they had and made a new life. This is a new species was born right then, and a species that with what they gave them can last thousands of years, possibly. I got to thinking when they did that as well, yeah, because maybe they can figure out how to build more things, because they have this to do, so they can start to mine, or they can, I mean, there's just all sorts of, I was like, this is, it was beautiful. And they also, during the thing, they were giving him reminders of home. It was releasing a lockbox things of reminders from home. And the last thing they gave him came out at Earth, and it was a letter from Candace.
Yep. She became a midwife.
She became a midwife.
In the Ozarks,
where they didn't have doctors, and she just facilitated births and helped people, and went to the libraries and read, because there was really no, a lot of them, they didn't have any kind of connections or phones or anything. It was a beautiful, it was another beautiful story within other beautiful stories. And that she forgave him, and that she knew he didn't ever get married again, and she understood, because sometimes you have one true love, and just because it doesn't work out doesn't mean you're ever gonna, means you're probably never going to love again, because that was it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's... And she said, you were that to me.
She never got married either.
Never got married again.
I don't have a lot to say. This is making me speechless again. I poured through this in one sitting. It's so well done. It's vastly different. I hate to compare apples to oranges. It's just different, and they're both the comics we suggested. I suggested Flux Mentality. This one is just on a different level, because it's
transcending the art form.
Yes, it is. It is in sequential story, you know, art telling a story with words, but it's not superheroes. It's just a great story.
It is a beautiful story that brings you down and brings you up and has a moral, and it's worth reading. I can't really say anything more than that. It's just it has real value in reading it.
And like a lot of good fiction or art, it leaves you asking more questions and thinking.
Yes.
Which this definitely does, which Flux Mentallo does too, but at a different level, because it's very based in superhero
and stuff. Confusing, but does, Jesus.
What?
and is confusing as Jesus.
Yes,
Flex Mentallo is just so. That's part of its thing. This is more straightforward in its message, and it's great to watch Roy come to its message, because Roy grows in his death and accepts his death.
Russell in this, I think, knows where he wants to go. And to compare and contrast, I wonder, given that when Flex Mentallo was written in 96, mm-hmm. whether that was Grant Morrison working through some stuff.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I think that is true.
It was, and I'm armchair.
You are. No, I legitimately was having that thought about the character of the writer or the creator yes. in that, which is, and we know Grant Morrison puts himself in his art. He's literally put himself in. And I did think that he was struggling with something, and possibly about his sexuality and who they are. Sorry, again.
I do it all the time.
I know. And you may be correct. Get him on the pod and we'll ask him. Them.
I'm going to message.
Yeah.
Hey, we got Mark Resicek, the drummer of the freaking Toadies, on here.
I know. I'm saying. I think
you asked me to do it. I was actually
no. You said should I do it? I said if you want to do it, go for it.
No. I'm not saying that. I will message anybody. People are people.
Yeah.
One person I was thinking about was Carl Potts, the guy that we met at the con last year that did Alien Legion, because he was so nice.
Uh-huh.
And I was in awe of him. I think I was literally nervous. Like, you could tell I was nervous meeting him in particular. There was a couple of, what's his face?
Well, we talked to somebody that
was it Kevin Maguire?
Well, we talked to, I don't remember who it was.
Yeah, it must have been Kevin Maguire.
The haircut.
And it must have been Kevin Maguire. The artist.
The artist?
Wasn't he an artist? Yeah, he was an artist.
Yeah, okay.
I'll have to go back and look. Anyway, so...
DeMatteis.
Or was it... Jam DeMatteis.
I don't know. I don't remember any...
I should remember this. It wasn't that long ago.
I just conversation with him because you dropped that we had a podcast to him and he just let that brush right by him. It was brilliant. I loved it.
It was hilarious.
I gave him... And he didn't... It didn't bother him as long as we dropped it right there. But he very quietly was, I am not interested in being on your podcast. I can tell you that.
We moved on quickly.
Yeah. And we did. Well, because we talked to him about how I had said on the podcast... that when we did Justice League, that unfortunately at part of COVID, I had basically that haircut that my sister gave me.
That's right.
For Guy Gardner. So.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I also had that haircut as a kid because it was the fucking 70s and early 80s.
It had to have been Kevin Maguire. I don't know why I'm blanking on that.
Okay.
I'm almost positive it was.
All right.
Okay. Anyways.
Is he an old guy with a beard?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah, because Kevin Maguire is the writer / artist, right? Because,
well, they're both. No, he's actually artist, but
does the writing too.
Some input. No, because there's Keith Giffen. Was it Keith Giffen? No, Keith Giffen and Jam DeMatteis are the writers, and then Kevin Maguire does the art on those.
Okay, well,
and I'm gonna have to go back and look
that,
at my.
I literally couldn't get that broken out, so I called them creators. Created of the Defenders, because it never broke out who did what. It's just, yeah, these fuckers.
Oh, yeah.
These three fuckers. I pretty much in the credits and stuff, it was basically these three fuckers.
Yeah, you know it was. Like, let's see if they make it till next issue.
Yeah.
Like
I said, the best part of that was them writing about themselves in the credits. Yes.
Okay, so look, I get, this is also, it's weirdly uplifting.
Oh, it is. It is. It makes you feel good about the fact that we're only got like 100 years left of the human race if we keep going the way we're going. I don't know how that was uplifting, but it really was.
It was though. Like, you felt like, oh, these robots have a chance and they're going
to... Well, the robots have a chance, and it went back to the Flintstones.
Yeah.
What it's down to is our connections and the people we're with and the people that we love.
Yeah.
And that is not a bad message.
No, it's a really good message, and he does it really well.
He does.
A lot of different ways, and yes. There's a reason this won the Academy Award for Best Comic Book, apparently, when it came out.
So it did win the Eisner
I swear I saw it. I couldn't find it exactly, but I swear I saw it on like Eisner. He won the Eisner for best writing, and this won the Eisner for best comic book series for the year.
Because on the thing it said Eisner nominated, so I didn't know if it won.
I thought it said Eisner winner, but I could be wrong. Don't listen to me.
I said, okay.
Oh my God. Jesus Christ.
Seriously? Wow.
Don't worry about it.
This has not been us making any kind of jokes in this podcast. I mean, we've just really just been, both of these were legitimately deep. Well, they were deep for the two of us.
True.
Some other people might be like, oh, come on, this isn't that deep. I'm like, I don't know. Both of them had some depth to it.
Yeah, a little bit.
So I'm really glad I got a chance to finally read this.
No, I'm glad you suggested. I would not have found this on my own, I don't think, or it would have taken me like, okay, what else has Mark Russell written? And so
yeah, well, I've seen stuff on Facebook and Blue Sky about this. Some from him, and so that's why it's been in my. I'm going to read this. I'm going to read this. I just decided not to read it when I found because the Saxe Public Library, the public library, it's free, yo, has a, because anybody in Texas can join it, and they have Comics Plus, and Comics Plus is part of like, kind of like, they have Hoopla, but they also have this thing called Comics Plus, and it seems to be mostly, it doesn't have Marvel and DC comics. It has more independent comics on it.
Oh,
so
nice.
It's a whole different thing. So I saw it in there, and it was each issue, and I did not do it that way because, like I said, I was waiting until I could get it all together so I could just sit and read it because I wanted to, and I did. Ooh, see, just for instance, on Comics Plus, I just looked up. It says The World of Black Hammer Omnibus Volume 5. So you said you wanted to read more of that. So that's... And you did join the Saxe Public Library. It's free.
I have not.
Oh, man. I told you about that. And then you didn't. And
I
can't
know.
Believe you.
I know.
That's fine. So Hav doesn't believe in libraries the way I believe in libraries.
No, I believe they exist. I do.
Yes, but I believe that they're a magical place that everybody should use. So we believe in them in a different different way. We all have to have our religion. And the public library is evidently mine.
I clap my hands.
You clap and your hands.
What is it from Tinker? What is it from
Tinkerbell?
Finding Neverland to make Tinkerbell.
To not make her not die because you.
Yeah.
You didn't say you didn't believe in them. You didn't kill off. They did.
Oh.
The fucking city of Dallas fucking closed my fucking library. Sorry.
Did they close the Lakewood one or no?
No, mine's Which one? The Southwest. It's on Southwestern and Skillman.
Oh,
they closed that
really?
Branch. Yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah, no, I'll be driving to the Lakewood branch to go to the library. But man, I had one within walking distance. I did never walk it. It's too far to walk.
Oh, well, that's what we have, you know, combustible engine cars.
Yes. Well, I would go on the way to and from places.
Sure.
Yeah, no, it really bugged me that they closed it.
Saxe. I got to remember Saxe. Yeah.
Yes.
Which is not spelled anywhere like you would think it would be spelled either way.
S-A-C-H-S-E, Saxe.
Yes, there you go.
I had to ask somebody how to pronounce it.
And I don't think I think he was nominated. I don't think he won, but I could be wrong. But I for sure nominated. I saw for sure he was nominated for
Traveling
Mars.
Yeah, he was definitely nominated for it. Because that was on the cover. It's nominated for the Eisner Award.
Yeah,
which
I thought for
that's
some reason
a hell of a, that's a hell of a thing to be nominated for.
Yes.
All on its own. So.
Correct. I agree.
All right.
Wholeheartedly. Anything else to...
No, I could probably talk a whole lot more about it, but I think...
There's so much going on. It touches on... So you mentioned about the stuff we built, like Voyager.
Yes.
Or is it Voyager 2 that's still going past...
Yes.
It's still going strong that was launched in the 70s.
Yes.
And still sending back data.
Yes.
There was a weird tangent. There was a good documentary. There is still a team, NASA-funded, that monitors the data...
That's good.
From that probe.
Because it's data. Data is good to have.
And they can still send it programming to fix stuff. It's amazing. It's science and technology is even from back then, but much less, much more now. It's even just beyond. Anyways, it's just amazing. That's a really good documentary. I don't even remember what it's called, but it was really good. Talking about this team that was, it used
called,
to be.
It's called Star Trek: The Motion Picture.
There you go. Yes, V'ger. When the team started on that project, it was like a, you know, you could fill a stand of people, and it was so kind of like eerily sad because it just over the years just shrunk, and now it's like seven people. And it used to be like hundreds, maybe 1,000. I don't know, that were on the project, of course.
Oh, yeah.
It's still going. And you have people that were original to some, I think, either original or darn near, that are now in their 70s. Mm-hmm. They were right out of school. Anyway, it's really good. Okay, tangent. So you're mentioning about that's the stuff lasting longer than, and it's done. It's not. It's still doing its job.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
So
what do you want to read next time?
I'm going to suggest Spider-Man Noir.
Okay, which one?
The first four issues of the original Spider-Man Noir that I found. I think it's the first one that collected whatever on the Hoopla. I'll send you the link.
We didn't read that before.
Did we?
I mean, I've read it, so I don't know if I've... Oh, criminy. I don't know. We've had a lot of... How can I...
I know. Now I'm trying. Now you're making me second guess myself if we read that. Maybe we did?
I don't know. Hold on.
No, we talked about it.
We did?
Yep.
Did you find it?
Yep.
Okay.
I knew we had.
Okay.
I need to go back and read. There's stuff that I'm thinking of that I need to reread.
Dude, that was season 3. That's not even that long ago. It was the penultimate episode of season 3.
You get to use penultimate again?
I did. Because I read it. That was in the notes. Many of these.
Okay, then hold on. Let me see what's on my favorites.
Sorry. Well, why you do that?
Oh, no, I know what we're going to read.
Okay. What is it?
The first six issues of the Gail Simone run on Uncanny X-Men.
Okay. Cool.
That'll be nice and X-Men-y.
Gail. How do you spell Gail? No.
It's with a...
You didn't have to yes and that. That was a.
No, I was gonna tell you how to like actually write a G because I don't think I know how to.
I didn't.
Make a C.
Honestly, I was just reaching over and not doing it. I wrote, and I don't even know why I wrote down Gail Simone because you're gonna send me the link. But I did. But there, it's like an O with a little line into it because I didn't actually make the capital G correctly. Because I'm looking at it, it just looks like it looks like a weird circle with just a, you know, where the G is. Anyway.
Yes.
It's like, what okay. the hell? The rest you can, it almost looks like a Q that's kind of turned wrong.
Oh, no.
It's Quail Simone. I am going to suggest a comic called Local Man. The first five issues. It's Stray Dog creators Tony Fleece teams with Revival's Team Seeley for a wildly critically acclaimed story that combines rural crime noir and superhero action. I have not read it. It popped up in Hoopla. I looked at it. I said, that looks right up my alley. And I told you if I saw some things that were a little different that I might want to read, I wasn't going to read them first and then suggest them. I was just going to suggest them. So,
well, the Spider-Man Noir, you know what? As soon as I said it out loud here, like I saw it suggested, or maybe I saw it in my favorites. I was like, oh, we need to read that. And then when I said it out loud, I was like, wait a second. I was like, we read that. I know we did. Cause then I saw the cover and I was like, wait a second. Totally read that. Although eventually Mr. Traveling to Mars, we're going to read V for Vendetta.
Okay.
Eventually, maybe not this season.
I mean, I've read it, so we can do it again. It was just, I did not want to launch this season with V. I was not back into doing it. It was
too on the nose.
It was too on the nose too early in this. I told you, we can get it when I think we're deep enough into fascism now that
I'd
be okay.
Could we do that in Mouse, M-A-U-S?
I couldn't do that.
I
hate to say I don't want to read it, but I don't want to read it. I just don't.
No, in fact, now that I'm actually thinking about reading V for Vendetta, it would make me too angry and upset with the news every day. So, hey, did we just do a podcast?
We just did a podcast.
Did you just become a pod person with me once again?
I did not.
Well, I think you did.
No, you're just a weirdo.
Just because you don't like pod people, even though you're a self-hating pod person. You can't take it. You can laugh at it. It's okay.
I'm not laughing.
Oh, no. Don't make Charles angry. You wouldn't like him when he's angry.
Yeah, because he's a pissy little bitch.
All right. Well, hey, thank you everyone for listening. Send me an email for gosh dog dog. I'm just sitting here. It's just me and Chicken. Sad Chicken waiting for a freaking email. What freaking email, people? Come on. It's Bush League. Okay, I'm joking, but seriously,
make me feel better. Seriously, he's not joking.
No, I'm not joking at all. But no, thank you for listening. Thank you to Chris Fox for being able to take a joke. Thank you to Patrick for doing the intro music and the website. And thank you again to Charles, as always, for doing the pod with me, doing all the heavy lifting. I just sit here and talk and blather. And then he edits and produces and publishes. So thank you.
That's not true. You don't just sit there and blather. You also do things like tell me the names of characters, which I find very helpful since I don't know them. You also tell me the names of the creatives, which I generally do not know or cannot remember at the time when we're doing it, unless it's written down in front of me. So no, you have a very, very important role. I really feel like when I'm writing the liner notes for the episodes, I should call you and go, okay, who the fuck wrote this again? Fortunately, the internet does that for me.
Yeah. Well, and I usually, the last few episodes, I generally, when I read this stuff, I just have a pad and a piece of paper, a pad and pen, and I'll just jot down some notes because I won't remember everything off the top of my head. I'll just say, here are the main characters, here are the creatives, here's the year. And it also just helps me to remember stuff for the pod.
Yes.
Actually writing it down. Just,
I got you. Yeah, no, I have.
And I haven't been doing that recently, but I need to start doing that again so I don't blank on like Leopold and Albert, which is driving me insane.
I never write things down. I just don't take notes. I never really took notes ever. And so I don't take notes with this. I just.
If I write something down, it's almost guaranteed I'm going to remember it. It's kind of one of those things.
I think that's good. I'm not saying that it's a good thing I don't take notes. I'm just saying it's just not something I've ever been good at. I also tend to absorb most of what I read. So it's not as important to take notes. And it doesn't matter if I write a fucking name down, except the only way it would matter that I wrote a name down is that I could literally read the name. It will not make me remember the name.
Well, I've tried to suggest two comic books here very recently, which is starting to give me a little bit of pause. I tried to suggest Sentry. Remember, I was like, hey, did we read Sentry? And you're like, yes, we read Sentry. And then just now I was like, hey, let's read Spider-Man Yours. You're like, which one? The original one? You mean the one we read in season 3? Never mind.
I didn't say season 3. It sounded real familiar to me. I was like, that seems like something I would have suggested.
Yeah, well, all I had to do was Googleize it. I did Hav and Charles Talk Comics, Spider-Man Noir, and guess what? Apple Play said, hey, here's the episode. Dumbass.
And you know how I know I suggested it? Because I just flipped through the podcast I got on the podcast app. I know I suggested it because it's first in the title.
Ha! Well,
that's how I name those. But that's how I name it. Because I gave you, because I thought Hav and Charles Talks Comics sounds better than Charles and Hav Talk Comics. Just because I just think it works better. And I liked the abbreviation JCTC. I decided, well, you got to be named first. So all of my comics will be first in the...
Ah, okay, good to know.
Yeah. So I think I've brought that up to you, but you hadn't really noticed that in the... You don't look at the titles. Have you ever read any of the liner notes that I do?
I do read the liner notes, and I did read the website. Okay. That's very funny, by the way. It's very well done. The reason I know you suggested it, because Proctor Valley Road, I know I suggested
that.
Oh,
yeah. That was the one you were talking about. Wasn't Proctor Valley Road written by...
Grant Morrison.
Yeah, that's funny that you did, because I was trying to come up with Proctor Valley Road because that's the one that's kind of like, that's the premise of, not the premise, but it gave me big...
Stranger Things.
Well, Stranger Things and the Mystery Van people. Scooby-Doo.
Scooby-Doo,
it
you're right.
It was Scooby-Doo. Yeah.
Yes, you're right.
So, yeah. Anyway, okay. Hav, thank you. You are helpful on the podcast. Otherwise, it would just be me talking to myself, which I do, but no one wants to listen to it. So thank you for everything. Hey, thank you all of you that are listening. We appreciate it. And goodbye.
Bye. And you were recording, right?
Son of a bitch.
Ah-ha.